Welcome to the Social Network Show. How do you feel about social technology and this connected, networked world we live in? Your host of the Social Network Show, Dr. J, interviews informed and entertaining guests to tackle the most pressing digital issues of interest to business professionals and nonprofit leaders, to parents and educators, and to anyone wondering where all this is taking us. And now, your host, experimental psychologist, Dr. Jane Karwoski.
With so many pressing needs in today's society, to avoid reinventing the wheel is a top priority for most interested parties. But how will you know what has already been invented unless you are connected to and collaborating with others working on the same problem? Many of you recognize online harassment of individuals, especially children, as a high priority problem. Today, you will be hearing from one of the organizers of the first Digital Citizenship Summit, recently held at St. Joseph's University in West Hartford, Connecticut. It brought together many people and groups working on this and related problems. Welcome to the Social Network Show. I'm your host, Jane Karwoski, experimental psychologist, Dr. J. I'm delighted to introduce Dr. Mary Alice Curran, Assistant Professor of Education at St. Joseph's University. Welcome to the Social Network Show, Dr. Curran.
Thank you so much. So great to be with you today.
In your university bio, you refer to the importance of having been a middle school teacher and how that plays in your life today. Why is that so central to your identity and current activities?
Well, I can tell you, if anybody has ever either taught at the middle school level or has young adolescents, you understand that change is synonymous with those developing ages of, you know, early adolescence. And so I really credit myself to being so open to change because of my years, my formative years when I first started teaching happened to be in grades 6, 7, and 8. And, working with middle school students, they recycle the three same questions all day long. Who am I? How do others view me? And where do I fit in? And as they recycle these questions, they're trying on different personas. You and I did the same thing, but social media wasn't around when I was a young adolescent. So now that we are, still asking the same, adolescence hasn't changed. So we're still asking those same three questions, but there's a permanency to while we're figuring out those answers. And so I really feel like, how I got involved with digital citizenship really stems from my interest of being a middle school teacher.
It's interesting that it's very much like looking in the mirror. You know, people, sometimes adults wonder, well, why are kids always checking out what people are saying about them on social media? And yet we wouldn't question, why are they looking in the mirror to see what they look like to other people?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, like I said before, like adolescence, it hasn't changed. It's the same thing, same questions that we asked as we were trying to figure out, you know, our place in the world. And so with the onset of social media, it's really imperative that, to me, digital citizenship is like leading the way with education so that our students are informed and they're empowered.
Very good. So there, it's meeting this challenge head on, and I like that. What can you repeat those three questions again? Who am I?
Okay. Yeah. So this was actually my dissertation was specific for middle school and in middle school development. And so basically, you know, nothing's changed in adolescence. Adolescents still ask the same three questions. They recycle them all day long. Who am I? How do others view me? And where do I fit in?
Okay. Well, now we're talking about digital citizenship. And the reason I wanted so much to have you on the show was your involvement in the first Digital Citizenship Summit. And you used a lot of, made a lot of use of the hashtag DigSitSummit. And so what do you mean? Can you elaborate a little bit on what you mean by digital citizenship?
Okay, digital citizenship in the simplest terms is to how to help, my perspective is always students, but students, how can we help them be safe, ethical and savvy. I mean, that is in simplest terms how I would describe digital citizenship. If I were to go a little bit further, I ultimately want to help students be able to think and act at a local, global, and digital level simultaneously.
And that seems to be what we end up doing, perhaps without any knowledge of how to do it. So that is a great goal, I think. How did you start to organize the summit? And can you tell us a little bit about what a summit is in general, what it is to accomplish?
Okay, well, I can tell you that I've been actually tired of the fact that digital citizenship has been an add-on. It's been an add-on to professional development. It's been an add-on to conferences. And so I was actually really interested in carving out, you know, an entire day, an entire space dedicated solely to digital citizenship. And I happened to get connected with David Polgar, who also is in West Hartford, Connecticut, but, you know, our paths had never crossed. And actually a tweet had originated on the West Coast connected both of us, saying, oh, you're both, you know, interested in this topic, and you both are from the same area, you should meet up. And so David and I met for coffee in West Hartford Center, and, you know, I shared, you know, my interest about, you know, that we really need, there's a desperate need that not just, you know, students and teachers and administrators and parents, I mean, it takes a village. And so we, you know, let's carve out a day where all the stakeholders can come together. And that to me, like, really describes, like, the summit. And so David and I, over coffee, you know, this idea hatched. And then we hosted it at my university, which is the University of St. Joseph in West Hartford, Connecticut. And, you know, an idea became so much more than what the reality was. So, you know, you had mentioned before about our hashtag. Our hashtag, DigSit Summit, at one point during our summit, was the number one national trend on Twitter. So not only were we able to attract a live audience, but we had a virtual audience that, you know, was an integral part of our learning that day.
Great. That's, when you say the main stakeholders, can you kind of give us an outline of what areas they came from?
This was amazing. Right. To me, up to this point, for digital citizenship, it's unfortunately, to some people, it's a very obscure term. And if you ask 10 people to define it, they could define it 10 different ways. And so, you know, we've been working in silos. So what the DigSit Summit, what we were able to do, were we were able to merge these silos. And that meant we had the tech industry there. We had parents there. We had administrators there. We had students there. We had educators, library media specialists, informed citizens that, you know, from the community that wanted to learn more. And so to get these stakeholders that usually might not come to the same table to be part of the conversation, to define what digital citizenship means, what it looks like, and what it's going to be in the future, it really was a remarkable feat that we were able to, you know, not only just be able to pull off, but there has been such interest, like we've struck a nerve, that this is something that, you know, is like that ripple effect when I toss in a pebble into the water and it's got that ripple effect in the waves. We've created a mighty wave.
That's awesome. You mentioned the silos and everyone working in their own individual ivory tower, you might say, as far as academia goes, but also across all kinds of industries and so forth. And it is amazing to me how strong that is, because you can talk to people, researchers that are across the hallway from someone working in the same field, and they don't know it. So
it's so true. It's so true. And to be able to collectively gather in one physical space and spend an entire day and see how passionate so many, you know, different people in different, you know, like, I, you know, when you are an educator, I think you just have lens on, you know, and maybe some horse blinders, and you're just thinking about, like, educators, and and you just look from your perspective. But on that day, there were so many different perspectives that actually shared the same foundation. It was an incredible feat.
So what are the what do you foresee as the results during this day and of collaboration and communication? What at the end of that day, what do you think you saw as far as a way forward? Do you have tasks you want to accomplish together? What do you see going forward?
You know, the best part that what I saw for the day was the positive focus on digital citizenship and like what we can collectively encourage. And, you know, when you watch the news or read the news, you know, you see all, you know, the negatives and what we need to avoid and many times some scare tactics. And I felt like our day certainly addressed, you know, the need to be safe and, but it really had a stronger focus on the positive, on social media, you know, as a learning tool, as ways for, you know, people to be able to be citizens, to change their local community, to change their global community, to change their digital community. And to me, that isn't necessarily the first, you know, topic of conversation about all the things that we need to encourage. So, you know, since the summit, I feel, you know, that this is a conversation that's had that ripple effect that we're already talking about a DigSit Summit Australia. I just had a Skype call last week with a digital parenting expert in Madrid. So a DigSit Summit Madrid. David and I are working really hard on coming up with our location for 2016, and we're hoping to announce it shortly. And so I feel like, you know, if David were here right now with me, we would say that our vision is that once a year we have one big summit. And then, you know, but we also help encourage these small, you know, not necessarily small in size, but, you know, localized summits. So, you know, Australia, Madrid, I know I'm having a Skype session on next week for Scotland. You know, this to me is where this goes beyond just individualized schools and individualized communities. This really does connect us on a global level.
You know, as you're speaking about that, and I want to mention that David Ryan Polgar has been on our program a couple of times. So if our listeners want to search for Polgar, his last name is Polgar, and very interesting discussions we've had with him on all kinds of topics related to social media and so forth and the internet. But it sounds to me as if you, in talking with various entrepreneurs on the show too, this is what people always look for. As you say, you've really hit a nerve or hit the vein, and because to have people just coming out of the woodwork, so to speak, saying, boy, this really resonated with us, and how can we do it ourselves? That must be tremendously gratifying.
Well, it does. And when you think about it, that it started over coffee, sharing this, you know, both of us coming from a different perspective because, you know, David comes more from the tech industry and being an attorney, and I, you know, am coming from the educational side. And like we've said, you know, I started, you know, my career, I pride myself on being a middle school teacher. To be able to merge our networks together, I think that really was what made this so successful. Had I launched this with another educator, we probably would have just really had that focus towards, you know, educators. I think that what made it successful was taking two totally different platforms and, you know, connecting those platforms and then getting people out of their silos, and coming together and seeing that actually, you know, to be part of, you know, we can't always just talk about what the problems are. If you want to be a part of you want to change the problem, you got to be part of the solution. Mm-hmm. And that's really what the summit is all about, is, you know, that my voice does matter, that I can make a difference. And then I want to do this collectively with other voices. One voice can become many.
I want to talk with you a little bit more in the second half about some of the specific points of addressing digital citizenship and the various groups that may have been at the summit. And you'll hear more from the Professor of Education, Mary Alice Curran. This is your host, Jane Karwoski.
Questions? Comments? Reach out to us. Our email address is questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. Or find us on Twitter @SocialNetShow.
The parent company of The Social Network Show is Social Network Intermedia, Inc., a full-service podcast production company. With SNI services, you can add the personal touch of audio to your communication with followers or customers. Set your blog or company website apart by letting your audience get to know you by hearing your voice. SNI provides coaching, recording, post-production, uploading, distribution, and promotion services so that all you need to think about is your message. To discuss the possibilities, email questions@thesocialnetworkstation.com. You're listening to The Social Network Show. I'm your host, Dr. J, and you are hearing from Professor Mary Alice Curran of the University of St. Joseph in West Hartford, Connecticut. One of the things I wanted to get into, Mary Alice, is when we talk about digital citizenship, it's similar to civics, how to be a good citizen in general, and this is going to be online. But what basic points can you give us for any of us that's working on trying to help navigate this tremendous change we're seeing in communication strategies and technologies and so forth? Any specifics that are key and basic to helping youngsters navigate this?
Absolutely. It's like it's very much tied to, you know, civics, but character education. So, you know, I'm always talking about with my students what we do when we think people are watching us. That's our reputation. And a lot of times you make, you know, young adolescents are making decisions to, you know, improve their social status while they think people are watching them. And, you know, I always say what I'm more interested in is what you do when you think nobody's watching you, because that's your character. So when you think about the digital perspective, you know, what you do when it's, you know, an anonymous site, or you think it's an anonymous site, you know, what are the choices that you're making? That ties back, you know, to character education. So, you know, to really think about, like, what are the, you know, the key points that we can help our students, like, to guide and navigate. You know, honestly, it's about empathy. It comes down to empathy. And until we are really able to help everyone be able to see that, you know, things can go viral. Somebody's most embarrassing moment can go viral because, you know, somebody decides it should be somebody's most, like, laughable moment. Well, that, you know, embarrassing moment, or, you know, that compromising situation, you know, that could be my sister, my brother, my cousin, my next door neighbor, you know, my classmate. But no matter what, how do we get back to that whole point that this is a human being, you know, and somebody's most embarrassing moment should never be at the expense of, you know, something that people will laugh about. I can tell you, I taught this course called Please to Tweet You. Are you a socially responsible digital citizen? And, it was a first year seminar course for, incoming freshmen at my college. And I, you know, you're really trying to make this point, with students. And I can tell you something had happened, something had gone viral. And one of my college freshmen came in and, you know, really was speaking to the rest of the class and her classmates and said, you know, take that down. Like, well, I don't know why everybody's posting that. because if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And I wanted to do like that victory dance, like, you know, you know how they do it
yes.
for the football and spike the football, because that's really what we need to help everyone to be able to see that I actually am part of the solution. And I, you know, one person can become, you know, many. And, you know, how do we help our students to be able to stand up and speak out and see that they are part of this conversation and they can be part of this change, and that honestly, I always feel like empathy is, and so this year I'm teaching another first year seminar, and the focus is empathy in social media, where we can empathy. And if we can't find it, you know, how are we going to create it? And that's the other part. How do we help our students be able to, you know, be creators of content that is going to change, you know, their local world, their global world, their digital world?
That it brings to my mind some discussions we've had on the show with Maria Tatar, professor of folklore and German literature at Harvard, and she's talking about the importance of reading fiction because it allows people to put themselves in the place of many different people in many different situations and feel that's a way to develop empathy. So,
without it. In fact, yesterday, I have to tell you this, that my first year seminar, we read the book, the young adolescent book, Wonder, and we connected with a middle school, and they read Wonder, and we hosted a Wonder Day yesterday at middle school, and it was not, we can't just read and write about whether it's empathy or digital citizenship. I mean, we need to do it. So to me, digital citizenship needs to be a verb. And, you know, when you think about, well, where do I start? There are 9 elements to digital citizenship. And if you go to digitalcitizenship.net, and it's, you know, I want to credit Dr. Mike Ribble for setting these 9 elements.
Oh, yes.
Really the godfather of digital citizenship. So look at those 9 elements, and then you, there are so many resources that are out there, but you start to think about, you know, you didn't even look at the ISTE standards about how digital citizenship is part of the standards for students, for teachers, for coaches, for administrators, and then you see, okay, I have these connections. What is it that, like, I can do in my own classroom? And this is, like, we're not waiting until middle school. We really need to start in kindergarten. You know, what is it that we can be doing to get more student voice into this conversation? Because to me, it's all about, it's got to be a verb. So how do we get our students to do it?
I'm not even sure if I should refer to this brouhaha at Yale University, but I'm thinking that the response that the developmental specialist had, Erica, and the wife of the, she's the co-master or whatever of this Silliman University, and when I read what she said, I thought that's what she was saying, was that why rely on the administration to get into this conversation of what's acceptable and not, or not? What about the students realizing that they have the social power to set norms and enforce norms?
Oh, absolutely. And honestly, I feel like if we're ever going to have a solution about how we treat each other, it's going to come from students. I mean, students are our solution. And so the more that, you know, the more opportunities we take to engage them in this critical conversation, you know, you could have policies at school, you could have mission statements, and, you know, perhaps schools will decide, oh, we're going to have a student representative or a couple of students represent, be part of this, you know, mission statement. We got to get rid of the adults, honestly. The policies and the mission statements aren't going to change school culture. The only thing that's going to change school culture is our students, and they need opportunities, and a lot of them. So to me, this is like a 24/7 conversation. It's like having the talk, you know, when you think about, you know, young adolescents in particular, too. You got to have the talk with them. This talk, because social media, it's always evolving and changing, it's got to be constant, and students need to be leading the way. And rather than having, like, I don't know, adults, like somebody like me, trying to tell students what they need to do. I want to engage students in telling me what I can do to support them.
Mm-hmm. Good thought. I have another issue that I want to explore with regard to the summit, and that is there were lots of individuals from different disciplines, you might say, or even not even from academia, or but from industry, from you mentioned the information security. What kind of response, or what can you draw from the groups that were there versus groups that would not be interested in going?
Oh, gosh, that's a hard one, because I can't even imagine. Maybe I have horse blinders on, like, that somebody wouldn't want to be part of this conversation. You know, I think that, like, the big takeaway for the people that were there is that we need to work together. And, you know, I've gone, you know, I'm actually going to be a keynote at the National Conference on Bullying and Child Victimization in February. And the main audience there are school resource officers. And I remember the first time I went to that conference, it was several years ago. And I thought, gosh, where are all the teachers? And, you know, I listened to the perspective of the school resource officers, and I thought, at the time, we really need to merge, because just have whatever the silo might be, school resource officers, tech industry, parents, administration. You know, if we just have people working on solutions within only like-minded people,
mm-hmm.
I think that's the solution. That's the best solution for our students and for our state of being.
So what, after being at the conference of resource officers. Officer makes me think of law enforcement. What we've seen on the news lately of a school resource officer intervening in a difficult situation. What is actually a school resource officer?
So I think a school resource officer is going in and is really focused specifically on the safety. And, you know, they will have assemblies for both parents and for students. I can tell you, I did at that conference several years ago, I talked about a digital footprint and the digital tattoo. And I can tell you some school resource officers afterwards had said to me, I have no idea what you're talking about, but I now know that there are other things that I need to include in when I give my presentation beyond just the safety. You know, I guess the digital tattoo would really be more about your online reputation, you know, the choices that you're making. So, you know, the more different lenses that people look out of, if we collectively take the time to carve out space, and we're all part of this conversation, you know, we could really make some inroads into providing opportunities for our students to be safe, ethical, and savvy, both on and offline.
I think one of the reasons what you're saying is so true is that within any group, because it's, I would think, like within academia, it's a discipline, but it could be a job description. It could be a part of an industry. But what happens is that when we are in a particular job category, we are socialized into it. There is a point of view that dominates any of them. And so if we're socialized into that and pretty soon we're thinking like everybody else, well, then there's the need to talk to people who are looking at it from a different point of view.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, in the world of academia, you know, I'm in the School of Education. You know, this onset of, you know, social media and devices, and this is still something that is new, you know, in the world of higher education. And there isn't necessarily collectively a comfort level, you know, and that's not just about higher ed, but, you know, there are, if you can't control it, there are, you know, in schools of education, whether it's in higher ed or we've got, you know, schools in our communities that are want to keep our children safe. You know, we put blocks and bans and to try to keep them safe. And so that would restrict our access. And if you can't control it, I feel like sometimes people make decisions that, oh, well, we'll put these privacy settings in order. And but that I don't ever feel is the solution, because life isn't blocks and bans. And how are we going to help them navigate their life beyond all of that?
Right. And I'm glad you had industry there as well, because it's time to stop acting as if it's all the responsibility for safety and security can all be laid at the foot of the consumer. The privacy by design movement, I hope, will grow and put some of that responsibility on those that are gaining profit from the whole enterprise. Well, thank you so much, Mary Alice. You've been listening to Dr. Mary Alice Curran from the University of St. Joseph's in West Hartford, Connecticut. Thank you so much for taking time, Mary Alice, and I was so impressed that when I reached out and asked you to be on the show, you just picked up your phone and called me right away. I thought that was great. Appreciate
that. For inviting me, and it's been a pleasure, because this is, if you can't tell, my favorite conversation to have.
Well, I'm glad of that. And thank you for being with us for this edition of the Social Network Show. I'd love to hear from you, so please get in touch with us through questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. Every player for this show on our website has more episodes at the top of the player, so you can easily browse for past shows you might have missed. You can also see those easily on Audioboom, if that's your way of accessing podcasts. It has a very nice layout. Follow us on Twitter @SocialNetShow and myself @SocialNetShow with the number 2. Please have fun and be safe online and off until we welcome you here again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the worldwide show dedicated to social media networking and understanding the connected, networked world we live in. Listen to our archive shows on thesocialnetworkshow.com and follow us on Twitter @SocialNetShow. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia Incorporated. The views and opinions expressed are those of our host and guest and may not be the views and opinions of Social Network Intermedia.